Good evening. It's Rabbi Feldman's shiur, February 22nd. Tonight's shiur is sponsored by Pearl and David Schachter to commemorate the yard sale of David's father, Yehuda Aryeh Leib ben David HaLevi.
Okay, good evening. In the spirit of Mishenichnas Adar, Marvin Besimcha, whether or not that applies to the first Adar, we're at least also in the 30-day zone already in terms of Purim. So from one angle or another, it seems an appropriate time to investigate the question of the role of humor and laughter in Judaism. And just to begin with, a few disclaimers. First of all, sorry to disappoint, but this is not going to be stand-up comedy. Very few actual jokes will be shared here. You never know, but I'm not promising anything. If there is any, that'll be a surprise. It's also not a discussion of which famous comedians are Jewish. You know, that a lot of people are very proud of talking about those things. That's not what we're going to focus on per se. But more, it's just a discussion of what role does a sense of humor and laughter and jokes have within Jewish hashgafa and halacha. And what is the proper place for that specific skill and perspective within a Torah view. So there are many different ways to look at that question. And we'll begin, just by looking at some functional issues. So first and foremost, while it's true that I said we're not going to talk about the Jewish comedians, we'll just mention that sociologists often note, it's a very, very, very often repeated observation, that the reason, presumably, why the Jewish people, or one of the reasons why the Jewish people have produced so many funny people, is as a response to persecution. It's a way of coping with intense pressures from the world. By developing a sense of humor, so you're able to cope. So very few of these sociologists quote Shantra Nafal Hirsch, who made this observation exactly in that way, in his commentary to Chumash in Parshas B'Shalach. In Parshat B'Shalach, we find the pasuk that the Jews, when they're running away from Egypt, and things are getting a little bit tense, and they scream out to Moshe, "Hamebli en kvarim b'Mitzrayim." So what was the issue? There weren't enough graves in Egypt. So you had to bring us here to die in the desert. That was the whole point. We left there because there wasn't room for dead people in Mitzrayim. So as the first points out, it doesn't seem likely that this was a serious question. This seems to be something that we recognize as sarcasm. Essentially, this is a sarcastic remark. And he explains that this was a way of dealing with tension, that here it was a scary moment, and the Jews realized that in order to cope, they have to crack a joke. And then he goes on to say, this is what we've done ever since. This is what the Jews have continued to do all the following centuries, maintain a sense of humor so that they can cope through their persecution. So from that perspective, the idea that being able to crack a joke once in a while is sometimes crucial to our mental health, and therefore perhaps a major component of the obligation of the Nishmartem Ol Nafshoseichem, I think that can be pretty much readily acknowledged. That's even phrasing it in the Bedi'evad kind of way. I mean, more positively put, the idea that a Simchas Achayim is considered to be a positive attribute as far as how we relate to all of what life offers us, and that it's a statement of how we view our mission in life. So all of that is, I think, well accepted and understood. So if we do grant that, then it's a very short step to draw the conclusion that if it's valuable for us as individuals to be able to maintain a sense of humor so that we can cope, so then to provide that for others is a chesed, is a basic act of kindness, because if it's valuable for us, then we can provide it for others, so then for sure that makes sense. So we don't have to just do the math. The Gemara does state this pretty explicitly, because the Gemara tells the story in Maseches Tainis, and that's what pays in the Ralph, very well-known story, that Rav Broka Choza was in the marketplace, and he asked Eliyahu HaNavi, who he had a habit of speaking to there, he asked Eliyahu HaNavi, "Tell me, who in this marketplace are Bnei Alma Da'asi, are people who have a chelek in the next world?" So he always said, that guy and those two guys. So he was curious what it was that gave them the status. So he followed up and he asked the people, so what do you do? What do you do? So those two guys who we mentioned, he said, what do you two guys do? So then he responded, Anshe Biduchei Anan, which seems to translate as, we are jesters, we're comedians. That when we see people who are depressed, so we try to cheer them up, we try to tell them jokes so that they will be happier. And also when we see people fighting, we do whatever we can to try to make peace, to try to stop them from fighting. So for those activities, apparently the Gemara tells us they were zoche l'olam haba, that they had a chelek in the next world specifically for that accomplishment. So here the Gemara seems to be saying very clearly what we could have figured out, again, putting the parts together, that not only is it a chesed, but it is specifically highlighted as something that earns one a special chelek in the next world if one is able to cheer up people who need a good laugh. And the Rambam expresses this also in his medical writings, his Sefer Haggas Abrius, where he talks about that point as well. The Reader's Digest emphasizes the phrase, laughter is the best medicine. I don't know who made it up first in English, but the Rambam does talk about it in his medical writings, that to be able to make people laugh is a part of the mitzvah of Bikur Cholim. So it's a broad chesed, and more specifically, it is also a part of the subset of Bikur Cholim when it's applied to somebody who is in a state of health in which that will be enhanced by such comments. In general, there's a focus on conversation when it comes to Bikur Cholim. I think it was Shlomo ben Gavirol, who has a poetic listing of the mitzvos. So when he talks about the mitzvah, he lists the mitzvos of staka and nicham avelim and Bikur Cholim together, and he says something like al ha dalim t'rachem v'ha avelim t'nachem v'ha cholim t'sichem, which would translate as you should have compassion on the poor and you should comfort the mourners, and the people who are sick you should talk to them. So there is a specific focus on conversation when it comes to Bikur Cholim, and as the Rambam and others point out, discussion about this in the Sefer Naim L'Mishpat to Masachas Nedarim, that telling jokes is also a major component to that, to be able to cheer them up. So that's specifically if a person is a chola. But it's not just when a person qualifies as a chola, a person who has issues on his mind, as all of us do from time to time. So to be able to cheer them up with humor, so the Gemara is highlighting this as an activity that is extremely praiseworthy. So those are two halves of one functional value to humor. In addition, we know that the next top thing on our list would presumably be as an educational tool. A person who can tell jokes while teaching tends to recognize quickly that that is a more effective way of getting the information across. And it seems to be fair to say that the Talmud agrees with that, both by advocacy and by practice. In terms of advocacy, the Gemara says that the Gemara Maseches Shabbos in Daf Lamed relates that Rabba, when he would be giving his shiurim, so he would open up with a milsa de beduchsa, which we would normally translate, we'll talk about it a little more in a second, as a joke. That he would open with a joke, as all the speakers know to do, to start off with a joke. So he would start off his shiur with a joke. The Gemara raises some objections to that. Right? Doesn't that seem to contradict the reverential attitude that we're supposed to have towards Talmud Torah? Gemara says elsewhere that we try to evoke the theme of Sinai, where we say that we learn the aim of a year of a restless of the day, we learn in a state of awe and trepidation. So the Gemara has an explanation. One answer is that that's referring to the middle, the content, but the beginning and the end, you could have a joke. And another answer the Gemara gives, an interesting one, is that that's talking about the students, but the Rebbe, he can be having a good time. The Rebbe can be in a different mindset. But in any event, the Gemara says that's how Rabba would begin his shiurim. It's also interesting to note, so Rashi explains that through doing this, his students, they niftach libam, that their hearts would be opened up, they'd be presumably more receptive to what he was going to teach. Now, in case you think that this is only appropriate for young children, it's just interesting. The Gemara specifically says that Kabadchi Rabbanan, seems to be going out of its way to suggest that he wasn't talking to children, he was talking to Rabbanan, he was talking to rabbis, he was addressing adult scholars, And in that context, he would feel it appropriate to open with the Milsa Duchsa, and the Gemara records that as apparently advocated behavior. And I should parenthetically point out that there were those who argued that the Milsa Duchsa does not mean a joke. It's normally translated as a joke. Some couldn't believe that was the case. So, for example, Rabbi Yaakov Emden, in his commentary to Pirkei Avos, it's called Rachem Shamayim, so he says it doesn't mean a joke, it means like a riddle, something like that, which is designed to provoke greater understanding. So sometimes you'll have a serious question, which is a real-life question, in order to get a real-life answer. And sometimes you'll ask some kind of an extreme, seemingly preposterous question, which is not a normal kind of question, but it's still there so that you'll enhance your understanding of the sugya. It's still there as a mental challenge. It's directly relevant to learning. It happens to be not entirely realistic, not entirely serious in that sense. It's not that it's a stamma joke. It's interesting because there are many references. Well, I'm going to talk about this a little bit more. Yirmiyah seems like a very interesting figure. He's mentioned throughout Shas as someone who tried to, in some context, to try to make jokes. The Gemara Maseches Nida says that he was trying to make Rav Zeira laugh, and Rav Zeira didn't play along. He didn't cooperate. There's a Sefer Shalos and Tshuvos called the Tshuvos Rabbaz, written by Saul Safran. So in his, he wrote an article in the journal outside of that Sefer where he suggests that it's like we just said a minute ago, that Rav Zeira was such a serious individual that the Yirmiyah thought that he was going to lapse into depression. So he thought that it was his responsibility to try to make him laugh. And he wasn't successful in making him laugh, but the Gemara Nida says that he kept trying to make him laugh, and he wasn't successful. So how did he make him laugh? So it sounds like from there that he would ask outlandish questions. Outlandish questions, la halacha. And it's interesting that throughout Shas you find this, that the Rav Yirmiyah comes up a lot with strange questions. The Gemara in Bava Basra talks about that he asked a question when the Gemara talks about a chicken, if it's found closer to one person, found closer to another person. So he asks, well, what if it's found with one leg this way, one leg that way, so it's half close to this person, half close to that person, then what do you do? And the Gemara says they threw him out of the basement. They couldn't take him anymore. So you do get the impression that he was kind of pushing the boundaries of what was a legitimate question, and apparently it connects to his overall attitude. Later on, the Gemara Bava Basra, I always thought this was something to investigate what was going on there. Later on, the Gemara Bava Basra, if he asked a different question, they let him back in. So how he earns his return ticket in is something Taba to try to figure out. But he appears throughout Shas, often Zeira being, so to speak, the straight man, Zeira being the more serious personality, and Yirmiyah being a very different type of personality. But it is sometimes specifically also associated with types of questions where the questions don't seem to correlate to reality. But at the same time, you could maintain that it's still in the interest of expanding an actual halachic discussion. So that might be consistent with what Jack London is saying, that it means a joke in that sense, you know, kind of a riddle, you know, where do you find such a thing, a question that's asked in a provocative way, but still somewhat of a part of the actual learning itself. Other stuff in the Sefer called Shirei Tara, it's quoted in another Sefer called Based Iron on the Kol Yashas, where he says also that it's not a joke, not it's Dvarim Pelim, but rather it's things that were meant to sharpen the minds of the Talmidim, things, again, outside of the scope of the normal learning. So he said that it's actually closer to what we might call Purim Torah, but he also doesn't mean that it should be funny, but that they would say Pilpulim that were non-halachic, didn't actually correspond to what the real din was. So they were a joke in that sense. They weren't serious, but they were intricate, and they would challenge and expand the minds of the Talmidim again to open up. So there are those who take this position that we shouldn't translate it as a joke in the sense that we normally associate jokes, but the common understanding of this phrase is that's what it is. Milsa Duchsa is a joke, and that he would open up with that. So in addition to the Gemara telling us about that, so the Gemara does it, and we definitely do find jokes in the Gemara. It's related that somebody once asked by Aryeh Kaplan, said, Rabbi, are there any jokes in the Talmud? And he responded, yeah, but they're all old. So not much you could do about the fact that they're all old, but at least they're there. And if you look, if you know how to look, you could definitely find them. The most famous example probably is the Gemara in Sefer Yirmiyah on Daf Tes, where the Gemara talks about the Bedikas Chametz, about how you have to search the house for Chametz. And the Gemara talks about a Chulda. A Chulda is a weasel. And the concern that you should have, that maybe if there's a place where you don't normally bring Chametz yourself, that maybe the weasel is going to drag the Chametz from somewhere else in your house to this place. So the Gemara raises the consideration that maybe right before Pesach we should be worried that the Chulda is going to stock up, that the Chulda is going to realize that it's not going to be Chametz in the house, so it's going to stockpile some more Chametz. That's a very smart weasel who has a palm pilot, who knows who has a black chart, he says what time Pesach is, knows what's coming up. So it's hard to believe that the Chulda is so smart that it realizes that there's not going to be any Chametz next week. So the Gemara already is a little bit unusual, already a little bit of one of the definitions of Moshe Duchas already seems to apply. But then the Gemara says, to express how unlikely it is that the Chulda knows what's going to come up, says, the Ki Chulda Nevi'ah, is Chulda a prophetess? Which is also a joke, because there was a Nevi'ah named Chulda, so this seems to be an intentional pun. It's hard to escape the conclusion that this is a deliberate joke. But in addition to that, there are many more, and I could advocate, if you can get through the very hard academic Hebrew, there is an article about this in the journal Badad. Badad is the journal of Bar Ilan, many fascinating articles. So an article there by Benjamin Engelman, who talks about hidden and revealed humor in the Babylonian Talmud. And suffice to say, he finds quite a bit to write about. There's quite a lengthy, detailed article about all the humor that he unearthed. And he makes this point. He says, essentially, it shows you two points, among other things, but in the beginning, the article says it shows you two things, that the Chachmei Talmud were capable of joking, but that they also felt that the jokes were worthy of being recorded in the Gemara, that these were not things that they were ashamed about, that these were things that they were memorializing, as he put it, jokes with a hechsher, jokes that that made it into the canon. So that's something to be said for that. So that's that seems to be an advocacy, both explicitly in the story with Rabbah and also through practice, of the value that jokes can have in an educational context. So far, we're really talking about functional purposes. To help us cope, to help others cope, to help teach more effectively, perhaps to help remember. We know that we always remember the different Torah that are associated with jokes better. Okay, so all of that is valuable and important. But it could be that there's something maybe a little more fundamental. The Gemara tells a story, or Gemara just relates, in the beginning of Maseches Avodah Zarah, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu divides up his day, his daily schedule, into four parts. And one of the parts, one of the four quarters, he spends playing with Leviathan, the big fish. HaKadosh Baruch Hu plays with him. So it's a little bit hard to understand why we need to know that. Why is that something that should be a part of the Tarish Ba'al? How does that have a religious value for us? So Rav Shechter in his Nefesh HaRav, he quotes from Rav Soloveitchik, that Rav Soloveitchik once related during a hesped for Moshe Saskas, who was one of the Rosh Yeshiva at YU, that the intent of the Gemara is to help with the mitzvah of the halachta of the drachas. We have imperative throughout Sefer Devarim, as Chafetz Chaim notes eight times in Sefer Devarim, to follow God's ways. So the Gemara tells us primarily it's a reference to Chesed, that we should act the Chesed just like a Kadosh Baruch Hu acts the Chesed. But it's other applications as well, and Rav Shechter has a fascinating interest in the Sefer Nefesh HaRav, where he has a lengthy essay showing more applications, that there are many stories, many points that both the Torah and the Talmud tell us about a Kadosh Baruch Hu, and the reason we're being told this is because it has a halachic nafkamina, tells us how to fulfill the mitzvah of the halachta b'drachav. So he says this is one of these examples, that the Gemara tells us that HaKadosh Baruch Hu plays with Leviathan in order to make the point that we shouldn't take everything so seriously, that we should know that not everything is such a big deal, we should be able to say once in a while, it doesn't matter. That's a very striking idea, and it seems to expand a little bit that what he's saying is that it's not just simba halachta b'drachah. It's not just simply, okay, HaKadosh Baruch Hu does this, so we'll do this. But that there is something a little bit more to understand there, that presumably what he's getting at is that in HaKadosh Baruch Hu's perspective, so he knows exactly how everything fits in. So he can see that some things are a big deal, and some things are not such a big deal. So that's really what a sense of humor is in the most ideal sense, to be able to realize what's important and what's not. And therefore, you can properly appreciate that what is important, because that which is important, because you're not distracted and weighed down by that which is less important. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu has, in that sense, the perfect sense of humor. He knows exactly how things fit in. So we are told, on some level, to try to imitate God in that sense, to try as best as we can to strive for a perspective where we know what's a big deal and what's not, so that we can properly appreciate that which is a big deal and not be weighed down by those things that are not. So perhaps in that sense, in a more fundamental sense than anything that we've seen so far, that there is a ideal of a sense of humor in this definition, that we should try as much as we can to see the world from as we can approximate a Kadosh Baruch Hu's perspective. Now, obviously, that's easier said than done. By definition, we don't have a Kadosh Baruch Hu's perspective. And perhaps we could suggest that this might give us a little bit of a different interpretation in one of the anti-humor Gemaras. The Gemara in the Maseches Brachos in Daflam and Aleph, Darshan from the Pasuk that we're all familiar with because it's part of the Shir HaMalos that we recite in benching. And we say, Oz Yimalei Schok Pinu, that sometime in the future, then our mouths will be filled with laughter. So commenting on the inference from that Pasuk, so the Gemara says, then what do you see from that? Oz Yimalei, then we will be filled with laughter. So not now, right. So Oser Li'odom Shimalei Schok Piv Ba'alam Hazeh. That it's wrong for a person to fill his mouth with laughter in this world. So just to mention for a minute, there is an extensive literature about this din, as it is. What exactly does it mean? There are a couple of two very lengthy articles about this that were printed in the journal Kovitz, based out in Israel. It's a beautiful Torah journal. It's written by Meir Gruberman, who wrote a very extensive survey of some of the positions that are discussed, and just to speak very briefly, so there are a range of interpretations of what this means. It sounds like it means that you shouldn't give oneself over completely to laughter, not that you shouldn't laugh at all, but that there should be a limit to how unrestrained your laughter should be. So that seems to be a valid interpretation, but there are those who understand it in a more absolute sense, that it means you shouldn't laugh at all. And you find the same range of interpretations, for example, that the Mishnah in Pirkei Avos is talking about the Kinyanei Torah, the last parak of Kinyan Torah, last parak of Pirkei Avos, which is called Kinyan Torah. So one of them, the Mishnah says, is Miut Tzchok, which you could translate again with the same ambiguity. It could either mean reducing your laughter, or it could mean trying to eliminate your laughter. And again, you find a range of interpretations as to how to understand that. So you find certainly that range when it comes to this Gemara about Aser Lamalei Tzchok Piv. And you find a number of other questions. Is this a real din? Is this it's interesting, once again, so we mentioned Rav Zeira and Rav Yirmiya. So in Akamara Nida that we said before, that Rav Yirmiya was trying to make Rav Zeira laugh and it wasn't working. So Rashi over there comments that why wasn't it working? So Rav Zeira, he says, wasn't laughing because of Asa B'Mali Tzchok Piv. And in contrast to Rav Yirmiya, he was Machmir Tvei. He was more stringent. So there are those who suggest the same range of interpretations that you have in the Gemara is really a machlokas amoraim, but really Rav Zeira and Yirmiya were in disagreement as to how this should be playing out. Is it a real din or not? That's also a little bit of a discussion. Some understand it as a din derabanan, some understand it as a midas chasidus. The Chidah has a comment in his Sefer Yair Ozen that people are not so machmer, not so mizer about this, not so careful about this. So the Stechamer quotes this, and others quote this, and they suggest, because Svengel says this as well, that he doesn't mean to criticize the world. He says people are not so machmer about this because maybe it's not a real din. Maybe it's a midas chasidus, it's not a real obligation. But there is quite a literature about it. So part of the literature, it sounds like, from the Gemara, and what I'm particularly interested here, is that it sounds like the whole inference is from a time when it will be mutter, that there is a setting when it's appropriate, and we're not there yet. So the truth is, there is a range of interpretations on that as well, that the Tur and the Rambam Tavli and the Ramban and his Torah Sa'adam, so they understand that this is maybe a Churban-related idea, that during the exile, so it's there's some kind of issue, there's some type of either midas chasidus, prohibition, absolute prohibition, in between prohibition, however you want to understand it. Yeah. So maybe that's a part of it. But that's basically because of the avelus of the Churban, and that when we have a Beis HaMikdash, when we have a Geula, so then that's not going to be applicable anymore. And there are others, like Rabbeinu Yonah, especially, in his commentary to Maseches Brachos, and a few others, who say, no, this is not about the Churban. This is about something that's not related to that at all. It's about the fact that, as the Mishnah in Pirkei Avos sounds like, that if people are too unrestrained in their laughter, so then they tend to be led into sin, they forget about mitzvah, so perhaps they get led into arayos, it's dangerous in general. So the truth is, it's applicable even when there was a Beis HaMikdash. So what about the fact that the Gemara says, that it's oz yimale, that there will be a time when it's not true anymore? She says, that's not just about the Beis HaMikdash, that's about Olam Haba, but there's a whole different setting when there's really a full redefining of life. So then the Yetzer Hara isn't in effect in the same way. So then it's a different story. But separate from that, there is a standing issue with letting one be too taken away by laughter. So it's a whole discussion how exactly to understand it. And there's a little bit of a back and forth about that. But perhaps we could suggest, based on what we've been saying so far, that the idea is that also Lamali's Chok Ba'olam Hazeh, because the purpose of the sense of humor is that we want to approximate a Kadosh Baruch Hu's perspective. But we also recognize that we don't have a Kadosh Baruch Hu's perspective, that we can't properly see the world the way he does. So we have to be aware of the limitations that we have in that degree. So we try to strive for that. Well, we also see that we can't be Malei's Chok, we can't have a completely full mouth of laughter, because we can't say we know everything. Ultimately, there'll be a redemption, and then, as the expression goes, then we will look back and laugh. When we see how everything fit together, we see all the things that we thought were a big deal are really not a big deal, all the things that were so frustrating are not frustrating, then, okay, it'll all make sense to us, and we'll be able to completely laugh. Until then, we strive for a sense of humor, for a perspective, but we recognize that perspective is always going to be lacking. So we could suggest, maybe Alfi Derech HaDrush, that this has to do with the connection specifically to Purim. It's certainly clear that Purim, at least in recent centuries, has developed a strong relationship with humor. And that plays out in a number of areas. And perhaps it could suggest that it has to do with this idea a little bit, that the Gemara Maseches Shabbos in Daf Pechatz tells us that Purim was a time of renewed Kabbalah HaTorah. That when the Torah was given, we weren't really so interested. The mountain was held over our head, and that we had to be compelled to accept the Torah. And in the days of Achashverosh, after the story is over, at the end of the Gil, the Pasuk says, Kimu v'kiblu, says the Gemara, Kimu mashakiblu k'var, that they upheld, they willingly accepted the Torah that they had unwillingly accepted so much earlier. So the truth is, as the Medrash notes, Medrash Tanchuma in Parshas Noach talks about, this is a direct contradiction to the Psukim and Chumash. The Psukim say, Naseh v'nishma, seemed like we were pretty happy about it. We always take pride in how willingly we jumped into the whole process. So the Medrash over there suggests that there's two different things. That Torah Shechsav, that we were very happy about. Naseh v'nishma, for sure. But Torah Shebapeh, such a complex thing with so many Chumras and details. And we can't take that. That we were not interested in. So Kadosh Baruch Hu says, no, it's a package deal. You have to take everything. And in the time of Purim, after the Nes of Purim, so then we willingly accepted everything. So if we take that perspective of Tanchuma, and then we read it that way, so essentially it means that at the time it was given, we perceived the Torah as too burdensome, as too much of a tircha, as too much of an imposition. And looking back in the aftermath of a redemption, of a miracle, then we were able to see, oh, what we thought was too much of a burden was really beautiful and glorious, and that's something that we happily accept. So perhaps a theme in Purim is the ability to find happiness and humor in life, happiness and relief amongst the tensions of life, so that we can properly appreciate that which is meant to be appreciated and that which is meant to be acknowledged in the proper way. And it's interesting to note also, in a halachic sense, so the Shulchan Aruch has a psak that it's permissible to get married on Purim. You can find the time. If you can squeeze it in somehow through the schedule, you can get married on Purim. So some of the notes of Kalim thought that was very surprising, because we have a din, Eim Arvin Simcha B'Simcha. So it's considered to be a prohibition, really, Minat Torah, to get married on Chol Hamoed Sukkot. To get married on Chol Hamoed Pesach is considered by most of the Rishonim to be Nisa D'Oraisa. So Purim, you'll say, okay, Purim's not D'Oraisa. Okay, so Rabbanan, it should be wrong. It should be a violation of the Simcha of Purim, just like it's a violation of the Simcha of Pesach and Sukkot. So some of the Achronim say it's a different type of Simcha, that the Pasuk says, in regard to the Regalim, it says, V'samachta b'chagecha, that you have to rejoice in the Yontif, excluding anything else. It shouldn't be mixed with a personal celebration. When it comes to Purim, it's a different language. When it comes to Purim, we say, Yom Mishta V'simcha. It is a day in which there should be celebration and happiness. So therefore, these Achronim suggest that in contrast to Pesach and Sukkot, when you have to rejoice specifically in the Yontif, Purim is a day in which you find happiness in anything. Anything that contributes to happiness is consistent with Purim. Haspedim are not consistent with Purim. Something that's sad is not consistent with Purim, but something that's happy from somewhere else is consistent with Purim. And perhaps it's the same idea that this is a day when we look to find the joys of life and to find how to be able to appreciate and not to focus on that which could drag us down. So in practice, just quickly, so we know that Purim has become a day where there is a theme of joking around and laughing. This goes back already to the Rishonim. The Rishonim discussed already that there is a relaxed attitude towards property rights, that if somebody spills some wine on your carpet in the context of a Purim Suda, so people are generally mochel. That's how some of the Rishonim assume maybe it's Kedai to pay anyway, but at least Nikar Adin, that small things like that, people are mochel because they want to have a nice time on Purim. They know that if everyone's going to be mocked by crazy, any slight property damage, then they're not going to be able to celebrate. So there is a different attitude in general towards a lot of things on Purim. And then in later generations, so we saw the controversial practices of the Purim Shvil and the Purim Rav, or the Purim Torah, especially in Volozhin. There are different attitudes towards this. We'll discuss in a second, but Yeshiva University, we firmly uphold the Purim Shvil practice, which could be, Rav Shechter has commented in another context, that YU was founded by people who came over from Volozhin, so we probably have to keep all the Volozhin and hug him. So in Volozhin, it's certainly it's recorded in many history books that Purim was quite an event there. In one book, it's related that in the days of the Netziv, the top student did a perfect imitation of the Netziv, which sounds very much like our contemporary spiels. This top student, his name was Avraham Yitzchak HaKohen Cook, and when he grew up, so he became Rav Cook, and a student in his yeshiva in Merkez HaRav was the Netziv's great-grandson. So he did a perfect imitation of Rav Cook, and Rav Cook commented, okay, I've been paid back, so the cycle continues. It's also related that Rav Itzel of Volozhin was a kind of Volozhin's son, that he disappointed with Talmidim because he got up on Purim and he gave a shir on Purim. Everyone's expecting Purim Torah. And he gave a shir for an hour. He talked about a stira between the Rambam and the Yerushalmi, and he explained them all, reconciled it. There was nothing funny about it. And afterwards they complained. They said, you know, Rebbe, it's Purim. It's not the way it goes. He said, what do you mean? I made up the Rambam, I made up the Yerushalmi. The whole thing was made up. So the Torah was real, but the Torah was fake. The whole thing was... So there is such a tradition. But the Spiel is a controversial practice, and there were many poskim who were quite vehemently opposed, for reasons we could guess. For the risk to cover the Torah, for the risk to Halbanus Penecha Verbarabim, people shouldn't be humiliated, God forbid. So that's something that, for example, the Tshuvas Kinyan Torah B'Halacha, the Tshuvas Maritz Dushinsky, Rav Sternbach has a discussion about this, and Moshe Musmanim, Rav Pam, and his Torah L'Melech. Many wrote very harshly against the Purim Shpil for that reason. But again, in many yeshivas, it is a hallowed practice. So it seems to be that we have to try to navigate the path in the middle, because clearly the concerns that are raised by the detractors are serious issues. Nobody is cavalier about those, so we have to worry about trying to cultivate an atmosphere where we're able to get them in proper balance, where we're able to do things under rabbinical supervision, ideally, so that the shul will not violate any of these very significant concerns. So it's interesting to note that one of the broader concerns we have to worry about is that we shouldn't turn into a mullet. So it's a reasonable concern for Purim. What do I mean by that? Because the Pasuk says in Mishlei, Letz, Kakeri, Ufesi, Yarin. Pasuk talks about a letz, about a clown. So who's the clown? So Chazal said it's a reference to Amalek. That's not how I would have pictured Amalek. I'm going to cast the Yetzias Mitzrayim movie. So whoever's going to play Amalek, he's not going to be in big floppy shoes and a big red nose and a wig. It's not the imagery of a clown. It's not the way we picture Amalek. So Rav Huttner, in his first essay in Purim, Maimer Aleph and Tachid Yitzchak, so he explains that letz does not mean like well, modern usage. We talk about a clown, and we talk about joking around. We call it leitzonus. So this is a reference, as Rabbeinu Yonah explains in a number of contexts, a reference to cynicism, that a person who is a scoffer, a person who doesn't think that anything is important, that's a cynic. And that's what Amalek was. Amalek didn't take the Jews seriously. The Jews were intimidating to everybody else. And Amalek said, they're not such a big deal. We know Chazal had the imagery, Asher Karcha B'Dach, so they jumped into the boiling bath so that everyone else said, it's not so hot in there, we can jump in too. So that notion of taking away the chashivas of something, that's what cynicism means. To say that something is not a big deal, to say that something is not so important, that's what it means to be a cynic. And in light of what we've said so far, we could understand how that's the polar opposite of the Jewish sense of humor. If the whole point of the sense of humor that we're advocating is that one should be able to cultivate a perspective, so he should know what's important and what's not important. So if you go so far that you don't think anything's important, you have a cynical attitude towards life, so then that clearly undermines the whole purpose. And as Mesillas Yesharim writes, you know, that one leitzonus can negate endless chachma. If you have an attitude of scoffing and cynicism, nothing's going to get through to you no matter what it is. So clearly that's not what we're looking for. That's gone too far in the other direction. It's the polar opposite of the type of sense of humor we've been describing, which is about preserving chashivas by allowing it to rise to the top, so to speak. So we can understand how, in addition to all the other potential pitfalls, very serious pitfalls, of embarrassing people, of degrading Kavodat Torah and the like, that we must be careful not to violate. Which is why, again, we recommend rabbinic supervision with these things. But in a broader sense, this attitude of cynicism, leitzonus, is a complete enemy to the type of sense of humor that we are looking to cultivate. So perhaps it's appropriate, this isn't, I'm not claiming this is the reason why it's set up that way, but the idea that Parsha Zachar always precedes Purim, and this year immediately leads into Purim, so the notion that we have to have a warning about the mindset of Amalek right before our endeavor to cultivate our sense of humor perhaps helps to keep things in balance, to help keep things in perspective, so that we can properly cultivate the Jewish sense of humor that Purim gives us an opportunity to focus on. So with that bracha, we should have a successful Adar, we should have a successful Purim, and we should be zocheh to the time when Az Yimalei Chol Tzeinu. Shikach.